Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action in Krishna Consciousness, text number 11. Kayena manasa buddhya, kevala indriyarapi, yogina karma kurvanti, sangam tyagvatma shudaye. Kayena, with the body. Manasa, with the mind. Buddhya, with the intelligence. Kevalai, purified. Indriyai, with the senses. Api, even. Yogina, Krishna conscious persons. Karma, actions. Kurvanti, they perform. Sangam, attachment. Tyakva, giving up. Atma, of the self. Shudaye, for the purpose of purification. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The yogis abandoning attachment act with body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. Purport. When one acts in Krishna consciousness for the satisfaction of the senses of Krishna, any action, whether the body, mind, intelligence, or even the senses, is purified of material contamination. There are no material reactions resulting from the activities of a Krishna conscious person. Therefore, purified activities, which are generally called sat achar, can be easily performed by acting in Krishna consciousness. Sri Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes this as follows. Iha yasya hair dasye karmana manasa gira nikilas papya bapsapsu vivan muktasu uchate. Person acting in Krishna consciousness, or in other words, in the service of Krishna, with his body, mind, intelligence, and words, is a liberated person even within the material world, although he may be engaged in many so-called material activities. He has no false ego, for he does not believe that he is this material body, or that he possesses the body. He knows that he is not this body, and that his body does not belong to him. He himself belongs to Krishna, and the body too belongs to Krishna. When he applies everything produced of the mind, the body, mind, intelligence, words, life, wealth, etc., whatever he may have within his possession, to Krishna's service, he is at once dovetailed with Krishna. He is one with Krishna, is devoid of the false ego that leads one to believe that he is this body, etc. This is the perfect stage of Krishna consciousness. Kayena manasa buddhya kevala indriyarapi yogina karma kurvanti sangam tyagvatma shudaye. The yogis abandoning attachment act with body, mind, and words. Body, mind, intelligence, and even with the senses, only for the purpose of purification. Is this too loud? Or? As mentioned the other day, Brahmarpanam brahmahaivera brahmagno brahmahutam brahmayava tena gantavyam brahmakarma samadhina. That the work of a man who is unattached to the modes of material nature and is fully situated in transcendental knowledge merges entirely into transcendence. For him, Brahman is the offering, Brahman is the sacrificial fire, etc., etc. In other words, what we're trying to achieve is a change of consciousness. Now there are different levels of how we can change our consciousness. Karma Yoga tries to change our level of consciousness by offering the results to Krishna. That purifies the senses. Jnana Yoga tries to purify the mind and Astanga Yoga tries to purify the intelligence. In any case, it's all purification of the intelligence because we have to use the intelligence to purify the senses and to purify the mind. And Bhakti Yoga tries to engage the soul and desiring to please Krishna. In other words, as Prabhupada writes in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Tejam Sadatam Yuktanam Vajantam Priti Purvakam Tadami Buddhiyogam Tam Yena Mam Upayanti Te. To those who are constantly devoted to serving me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So, Krishna consciousness is all about Buddha Yoga. Using our intelligence to engage the senses, using our intelligence to engage the mind, using our intelligence to engage the intelligence and the soul in Krishna's service. And the more Krishna gives us intelligence how to do that, the more we make progress in devotional service. Until the point that it actually becomes devotional, and then Krishna, out of compassion, reveals himself to us gradually, and we become ecstatic, because Krishna means ecstasy and love. The more we become actually conscious of Krishna, then the more we experience transcendental happiness, pleasure, ecstasy, and love, as well as enlightenment. So Prabhupada writes in the purport of that 10th chapter, verse number 10, that actually our process is Buddha Yoga. But Buddha Yoga can be broken down into different aspects, like Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, etc. That's 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita 47. But here Prabhupada mentions that when one knows that the goal of life is Krishna, but is addicted to material fruit of activities, then he's said to be acting in Karma Yoga. When one knows that the goal is Krishna, but takes pleasure in mental speculation to understand Krishna, he's said to be acting in Jnana Yoga. And when one knows that the goal is Krishna and seeks Krishna completely in Krishna consciousness, then he's said to be acting in Buddha Yoga or Bhakti Yoga, the complete yoga. Now, a person may be attached to a spiritual organization, have a bona fide spiritual master, but if he's not intelligent enough to make progress, then the Lord within helps him to make progress. The only qualification, he has to be willing to render all kinds of service with love. But we're not supposed to remain unintelligent. In other words, a bona fide spiritual organization and a bona fide spiritual master are supposed to give us the vision so that we know how to properly utilize our senses and our minds and our intelligence and our words and ourselves in Krishna's service. That's a much quicker way than just doing things blindly. But not everyone is willing to concentrate in the same way, and therefore the Paramatma will help one. If one is simply trying to serve him in some way, then Krishna will give intelligence so that gradually one will understand what Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra are actually saying. But it's not so easy without intelligence to constantly try to serve Krishna, do all kinds of service, and do them with love. Generally speaking, that's the realm of those who are more advanced in Krishna consciousness, and those who are just blindly following, even if they have if they're attached to a bona fide organization, a spiritual organization, and have a bona fide spiritual master, if they're not intelligent enough, they usually fit into the category of Kanista Adhikari. And Kanista Adhikari is generally addicted, most of them are addicted to fruitive activities, gross or subtle, mainly to get out of distress, just like now with this, not the coronavirus. That may be because here, I don't think anyone has the coronavirus. We don't even have a cold. But the distress of the whole society being shut down, not only here, but all around the world, over a virus that hasn't even killed a fraction in the number of people that the flu kills every year. Which means that they're going to destroy the whole our present economic system, which is not any reason to be attached to it. It's not exactly Vedic. It wasn't formed to bring people back to Godhead. But anyways, people are in distress. And probably the devotees are in distress too. We don't know what's going to go on. It's like Yamadutas are coming to take us. We ask, well, where are you taking us? Well, you'll find out when you get there. Assembly, they've shut down the whole society. People can't go to work, completely healthy. People are in places, they have no money. They were fired from their jobs. They have no food. They'll starve to death so they can be saved from the virus. The virus won't get you. You'll starve to death. You'll die a more civilized death. So, obviously, people are in distress. It's not by accident. Of course, everything is arranged by Krishna. Krishna arranges everything. But one has to become... A devotee should be undisturbed, knowing that actually Krishna is the controller of everything, and that he'll take care of us as he sees fit in order to help our spiritual progress. In any case, generally the neophyte devotee is afraid of distress, so they turn to Krishna. So that's very good. That's why distress is there in the first place. Krishna didn't invent distress simply to torture people, because he likes watching people being tortured. I'll give him a little distress, yeah. You don't like me, I don't like you either. Tit for tat. You don't want to surrender to me? Well, here, see what you get. no, okay. No, Krishna is always kind. The distress, birth, death, old age, and disease are simply meant to be impetuses to help us advance in spiritual life so we can become happy. It says in the Bhagavatam that Krishna saw his maidservant was sleeping and tried to shake her in order to wake her up to enjoy, spiritually, of course. But we're asleep and Krishna is shaking us and we're disturbed. Why are you shaking me? You know, don't you see I'm sleeping? I want to sleep. Don't wake me up. Or as Prabhupada said, it's easy to wake up someone who's asleep. But one who's actually awake but pretending to be asleep, then it's very hard to wake them up. So distress is part of, that's Kanishta Adhikari, and even wanting to have some comfort. That's normal. Because in the spiritual world, there is no stress. There's only comfort. So we naturally want it. We're just looking in the wrong place, that's all. We can get something that appears to be freedom from distress to some greater degree and some greater comfort, but it's nothing like spiritual freedom from distress and comfort. Klesha Agni, when that's more advanced, it becomes Moksha Lagu Krit. When that becomes more advanced, it becomes Sundarananda Vishak Atma. There's so much pleasure that one doesn't even know there's such a thing as the material world. It doesn't even exist for such the Prema Bhakta. So that's real freedom from distress. You don't even know there's such a thing as distress, material distress. Therefore, when we use our senses in Krishna service, which is like the beginning of Ashtanga Yoga, Yama Niyama Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, we start engaging our senses with our intelligence, because it's all depending upon using intelligence coming from Krishna. Then gradually we become free from distress and we become comfortable. Asana means stable and comfortable. Then we can actually advance to the higher realm of awareness. Dhyana, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. So similarly in devotional service, as it says, shrayan swadhamo vigna, shrayan Shayan Gyana Abhyasad Gyanam Dhanam Vishisha. That's why I'm getting mixed up. 433. Shakswadamo Viguna. It's not probably. 433. Shayan Dravya Mayad Gyat. Shayan Dravya Mayad Jagna Gyana Jagna Parantapa. Sarvam karma kilam partha, gyani pari samapyate. That the sacrifice of knowledge is greater than the sacrifice of work. After all, son of Kunti, the sacrifice of work culminates in transcendental knowledge. So by work we can purify our senses, and so we can become peaceful. And when we become peaceful, then we can actually sit and hear philosophy. We can actually get some knowledge. Those who are busily gratifying their senses, or because we gratify our senses too much, we come to class and we fall asleep. Or our minds are so agitated, the only thing we're looking at, can't see the speaker, we just look at our clock all the time. When is this over? I'm hungry. Let's do something more practical. I heard this a million times. I know what he's going to say. He's going to say, I'm not this body. Well, he may not be this body, but I'm sure hungry. He's going to tell me Krishna is God. I already know that. How boring. Why don't you say something more interesting? Tell us some pastime. Well, Krishna was in the bushes, and there were some goats. Wow, finally. Something interesting. I knew there was something about this philosophy which was interesting. So jnana, some knowledge to change our consciousness. And what is all that knowledge meant for? So we can work on the spiritual platform. So we can actually get spiritual experience. We have enough material experience. Of course, on the higher realms of goodness, we don't necessarily know what that's like. But it's actually freedom from all distress, practically. But anyhow, we don't have to go through the whole, gradual come up to the Brahmaloka level of consciousness before we experience Krishna consciousness. We can experience it if we get enough intelligence to work on the spiritual platform. Try to love Krishna without any reason to ask him for anything. Oh, Krishna, I love you, and I love if you can give me a few things too. I love you even more. As my birthday is coming up, and everyone's giving me some gift. I have a little list. I'll put it in the donation box. donation. No, to love Krishna out of prema, try to love him without anya bilasita shunyam jnana karma edavrita, without any other motivation and without any other activity which will interfere. And try to cooperate with the devotees, try to discriminate which devotees on what level, which devotees I should appreciate their example and try to follow their example, which will help me advance in devotional service, and which instructions I should follow, and who is the topmost devotee that I should strictly follow, and who is the devotees who are on the same level that I should try to compromise with them, try to cooperate with them for the mission of the Acharyas and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and which devotees I should not associate with too intimately because I'll get into a conflict with them, either mentally or physically or whatever. I'll simply agitate their minds and I'll agitate my mind. Or I'll wind up in the same position that they're in. Instead of helping them advance, then I'll degrade myself. I bridge preaching. It's dangerous. We can help people advance by introducing other things, Gauna Bhakti, astrology, Ayurveda, Vastu, whatever. But we could also meet people and become enamored by the Vedic sciences and think, well, I don't have enough time to do both. Study these books, these boring books, or study, everyone's psychology and everyone's, how the material world works and how I can control the material nature and make, all kinds of things, control my, become recognized for my prowess and appreciated. So it's dangerous. One may actually become attracted to the glories of Vedic sciences and forget the topmost science, Krishna consciousness. Or one may use the science and attract others to Krishna consciousness, but difficult situation, dangerous situation. In any case, the intermediate devotee, we're supposed to be acting on the intermediate platform and trying to help the non-devotees. It's the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's why he came. And we happen to be one of the reasons why he came. Or at least we should feel ourselves one of the reasons. That's the only way we become eligible to get his mercy, is that we have to want His mercy. And we think, well, I need a little of Your mercy because, you know, I don't know if I'm going to get enough prasadam tomorrow, so we do need Your mercy. But to actually feel oneself fallen, you know, that's how the only way to actually, what to speak of the most fallen, to actually feel meek and humble, then we can get the full mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we think, well, you know, I may be bad, but I'm not as bad as this guy over here. I may not be perfect, but I'm a lot closer than these people are. I don't really need that so much. I can give out mercy, but I don't need that much mercy myself. No, that's a misconception. We don't even know who we are. And if we don't think we need mercy, then I don't know who needs mercy. And when we find out who we are, then somehow or another we'll feel that we even need more mercy, because we'll actually see somehow or another how we're dependent on Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his acharyas, how much we're dependent on them. And if we think we can do without them, then immediately Maya will take over, because either we feel ourselves completely dependent on Krishna, or to some extent we'll have to feel ourselves dependent on Maya. There's no envy. It's not. We can feel a little dependent on Maya and a little dependent on Krishna. We could do that, but then we won't get the full mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we have to avoid the atheists. And they're everywhere. The internet, the news. If you want to agitate your mind, just open your computer. Go on, you know, whatever website there is, and except for Christian conscious websites, and they'll help you agitate their minds. It's not that we can't utilize some of the information. It may be necessary. I remember one year I was flying for the first time to Bolivia from Peru. And I didn't, at that time we didn't have computers. They didn't exist. And I never read the newspaper. But when I arrived in La Paz, Bolivia, there was a war going on. Much to my surprise. And I don't know why they landed the plane, but everyone was stuck in the airport because you can hear in the distance the gunfire going on. Luckily, a devotee picked me up at the airport, and we had to drive all around the city to go to try to find some way of getting to the temple that we didn't get shot. So I thought it was probably a good idea to at least check and see if there's a war going on before I go to the next country. So sometimes some information is necessary, but to go into every detail of what's going on, you know, there wouldn't be enough time to chant our rounds, become completely absorbed. And then it's like Bhumi the cow was being beaten by the Sudra, and the bull was being beaten by, the Dharma was being beaten by the Shudra, and they didn't want to really get into it when Pariksha Maharaj asked them what happened. Because otherwise they would have had to meditate on the Shudra. They would have gotten the karma he got. So, certain information is necessary, but not overly associating with the non-devotees. As a matter of fact, the more we give them, the more we take shelter of our acharyas and Krishna, then the more we can give them our association. And for those who don't want our association, we shouldn't force ourselves on them, because they'll simply become more agitated, more envious and angry, and will become disturbed also. It's like the typical devotee goes out to save everyone, and he meets a Christian on the street. I don't know if they have them here. When I went on book distribution, I didn't meet any Christians, because they probably... I didn't speak Slovenian either, so... In any case, you meet a Christian, you try to convince them, you know, the Krishna is God, or they should give up meat eating. That's the, you know, you get into the argument with them, and it comes around to, why do we eat meat? And then they just blow up. You're the devil, you know. It says in the Bible that you're supposed to eat meat. And they just get completely agitated. They won't buy the book. There's no question of selling them the book. And they have a Bible in their hand, and they're going to hit you over the head with the Bible. try and knock you out. So the only thing you've accomplished is you got into a fight. Nothing else is accomplished. Every time you see the devotee, they're probably going to get enraged. And every time you see a Christian, you'll get enraged also. So that's not the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. So we have to avoid those things which will actually draw our mind away from Krishna and try to concentrate on developing our own Krishna consciousness, not only with our body, with our mind and our words, but also use our intelligence. That's what these books are meant for. So we can constantly use our intelligence and keep ourselves connected with Krishna and Krishna consciousness, and then we can actually make some progress. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments? Yes.
Hare Krishna. You mentioned being bored by listening lectures. My friend frequently asks me, how can I be inspired to hear the same pastime of Krishna again and again? Because there is no suspense, no intrigue. I know Krishna is going to win. Anyway, so how do I avoid being bored in listening to the same pastimes again and again? How can I be excited about listening to the same pastimes?
Learn how to listen. You don't know how to listen because, first of all, we have no idea what's actually going on in these pastimes because you need spiritual senses to experience them. We have spiritual senses, but we're asleep, so we don't really experience very much because we're asleep. But if we could actually experience the excitement that's actually going on, the transcendental excitement and the enthusiasm and the emotions that are going on, we'd be overwhelmed by any of these pastimes, including Bhagavad Gita. At the end of Bhagavad Gita, Sanjaya says, in the repeated remembrance of this conversation between Krishna and Arjuna, I'm taking pleasure, being thrilled at every moment, and remembering again and again that wonderful form of Krishna, becoming ever struck with wonder, and I rejoice again and again. Doesn't sound like someone who was bored hearing Bhagavad Gita. And that's Bhagavad Gita. So, we have to learn a little patience. We have to understand we're crazy. We have no idea what's going on, both in the material world and the spiritual world. And therefore, what does that say? That which in the beginning was bitter like poison, at the end is like nectar, which awakens one to self-realization, is said to be happiness and the mode of goodness. So it may take a little purification before we get some genuine experience in reading. But that a lot of that has to do with faith. If we open the book, we think, oh my God, another day of reading Bhagavad Gita, hearing it. Same old thing, you know, again, tell me. I'm not the body. Oh, God. I'm not going to hear that again. Something about, you know, utilizing the body, the mind, the words in Krishna's service. Oh, okay, yeah, right. Okay, I'm doing that already. I don't get any experience from it. I do get prasadam, though, so it's not so bad. Yeah, we're blind. We're deaf. We're dumb. We don't really know anything what's going on. But if we take the process and continue to try to apply our minds and our activities in the service, then gradually Krishna will give us some insight and mercy. And if we do feel it's boring, before we open the book, we should start praying, please give me some insight, give me some mercy when I read this book. I know that you're not different from the book. I heard you're not different from the book, so please help me. Feel some different change of attitude, and then the book will change its attitude towards us also. If we have this attitude that, you know, you're boring, you're useless. I don't know however I got into this, you know. I'd rather read Time magazine. Somehow or another, I feel guilty if I don't open you up at least. No, we should pray, you know, we should change our attitude and pray. Please give me some realization, some understanding. Please help me. Then Krishna, in the form of the book, will actually reciprocate with us. Anything else? Matter of fact, that holds true for everything. Krishna is everywhere. We have the right attitude, then Krishna will reciprocate. And if we have some other attitude, he'll also reciprocate. Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.